Welcome to AI Willpower Business. We've got an awesome guest on today, one of my mentors, Bill Smale. Bill has got years of business experience, and we have a really interesting conversation. We talk about some of the interesting marketing techniques he's done over the years to so many different businesses, how you can really appeal to your target market and meet their needs, current economical times, and how businesses should be navigating it, as well as how has technology affected businesses over the years through many different revolutions, such as the internet. We also talk about the program that he started, Open Ground, and how that's helping entrepreneurs in high school get started starting their own business. We've got a lot to cover, so stick around. It's not going to be one to miss. Enjoy. Welcome to another episode of AI Will Power Business. I'm very excited to bring you another awesome episode with a truly remarkable guest today. Today, we're joined by Bill Smale, a seasoned entrepreneur, investor, mentor, advisor, and philanthropist. Bill's entrepreneurial journey began with a lawn mowing company in high school, and since then, he's been involved in dozens of businesses, playing a different role in each across various industries, from tech startups to real estate, retail, franchising, hospitality, and more, even including a five-star restaurant for dogs. Currently, Bill's primary roles include investor and managing director of Wireless Nation, where he oversees strategic planning and innovation to provide top-notch internet service alongside last week's guest, Tom Lin. Director of Freedom Lifestyle Villages, which offers affordable and secure community living for over 50s in a resort setting. Board member of New Zealand Brazil Business Chamber, where he creates opportunities for business and trade between New Zealand and Brazil. And of course, founder and primary contributor of Open Ground, a unique business startup program at Bill and I's former school, West Lake Boys High School. Open Ground's immense support to students with an entrepreneurial flair to start their own businesses, and so far it has been a great success. Bill's contribution to education and the community were recognized in 2013 when he was awarded the Queen's Service Medal. On a personal note, I was fortunate enough to go through the Open Ground program at Westlake, where I had the privilege of meeting Bill. And since then, Bill has been a mentor of mine, and the program and his mentorship has been a massive contributor to my success as an entrepreneur. I'm thrilled to have him on the show today to share his wealth of experience and insights. Bill, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, thanks, Will. Nice to be here.
Awesome. So I think, you know, we should start this podcast off by, you know, giving the listeners a little bit of backstory on you and, you know, your journey. So like I've said, you're a through and through entrepreneur, Bill. Could you tell me more about how you got started in being an entrepreneur and starting your first business in school? You know, what drew you to it?
Okay, well, while I was at school, I never really enjoyed my time and basically left school at the age of almost 16. Yeah. And I already at that point had a lawn mowing business, which I'd started while I was at school. And I had a couple of other little startup things on the side. One was making metal cutting wire netting circles out for florist shops, and I was selling them to L.A. Griffiths, who were a supplier to all the florists around Auckland. And when I left school, I had saved up nearly $8,000, and in those days you could buy a new Holden car for four. So I had sort of saved quite a lot of money, and I decided I just did not want to go back to school and that I was going to do my own thing. Basically. So I started from there, went on with that for a while. Then I worked in my father's contracting business for a short period when I left school. But he and I got on quite well, except that when I tried to change his business, he didn't really like it.
As most
so he told me that maybe I should look for something else, which was quite funny, really, because we got on really well, so it wasn't a problem. And I decided then I would go into a driving school, and I actually joined a driving school and started with that, working in a driving school. And then shortly after that, I decided to go out on my own. And the owner of the driving school told me that I will never do any good on my own, that I don't have the experience, and I've always loved cars, so I thought I know what I can encourage people to start and learn to drive with me. So I went out and bought two Ford Capri sports sort of cars and had them set up with dual controls and parked them outside the high schools. And it wasn't long before I started getting lots and lots of students because they didn't want to go in a Ford Anglia in those days. They wanted to go in something smarter and sportier. So I ended up doing quite well out of the business, out of that school. And then I ended up selling the driving school and moved on to a clothing business, which I had doing suede and leather clothing. And that went quite well. And toward the end, I sold out to my business partner there and then moved on to building some townhouses. I did townhouses and I bought my first house in Milford for $19,000 and sold it for $25,000 about a year later.
Oh my gosh.
After doing it up. And I just moved on from there doing various things. I've had other clothing businesses. I've had run a petrol station, had that for 12 years. And actually that was quite funny because when we opened, we built a brand new station. And when we opened, I've always been a bit radical. So when we opened, I decided to have advertised. I took big ads in the local paper and advertised topless pump attendants so that I could get a lot of customers coming into the opening. And I advertised all these huge ads with topless pump attendants. And I had four guys with no shirts on.
Oh, my.
But we had queues of cars lining up. It was quite funny, really. And it worked out really well. It was a great ploy to actually get the customers in.
Yeah.
And I always got razzed about that for a long time afterwards. But it was all about marketing again, you know, thinking of outside the box and thinking, how can I attract customers? And so then after that, I had a motel with my ex-wife. We had a motel and we ran that for 20-odd years.
Oh, wow.
Along with other businesses at the same time. I joined with another old boy from Westlake, Gordon Nickel, and he and I ran EdX Toys. We ran that business for 18 years. We had educational toy stores right through the country and we used to laugh at the paranoid parent market. All these parents would come in and they'd want educational toys for their kids and they'd come in and they were the absolute, what I called the paranoid parent market. As soon as they came in and said, I have a gifted child, we always had a gifted corner and we would take those customers to the gifted corner. So, you know, it's all, and there again, it was all about marketing again.
Yes.
And a lot of retail have trouble getting their customers to the back of the store. So they always put interesting things at the back of the store. If you go to a supermarket, all the everyday items are always at the back of the store. So that people have to walk past everything else to get to the back of the store. So we decided there's not everyday items with toy stores, but we designed the store with very large coloured hoops in it, like rainbow hoops.
Mm-hmm.
And we set these hoops up all through the shop, these big, huge hoops. And the kids used to walk down through the hoops as the rainbows, and they'd all be talking about the rainbows in the store, in the stores. And that became our feature. So every store was set up the same, and we had them quite a few of them through New Zealand. And they went really well until I sold out to a guy from Burger King, okay, who was a really nice guy. But he was here from Burger King, American guy, and he took over the business.
Oh wow.
And then eventually it wound up along the same lines as Pumpkin Patch and several of the other early adopters of children's toys and clothing. One of the main interesting things that happened from my school days, a lot of my classmates that were at school with me that were in the bottom class like I was became very wealthy.
Yeah.
They were all turned to entrepreneurial skills. One was a surfer who was at school all the time, never at school at all, and he was always at the beach all the time, sorry. Yeah. And he went off on his OE and married a Hawaiian girl and set up a surf school in Hawaii, and he's now got, I think he's got three sons who are all in the surf school.
Oh, wow.
Now, and his kids are in their 40s, like mine, and they run the surf school and they teach all the movie stars to surf.
No
and
way.
It's quite, he made a huge business out of it.
Yeah.
Very, very, very wealthy guy now. And another one ended up, he was into motorcycles and he loved motorcycles. He set up most of the motorcycle franchises in New Zealand for Suzuki and a lot of those brands, you know, the new yeah. Japanese brands. And
wow.
He set up that. He had most of the stores in Barry's Point Road, then he sold out.
Oh, okay.
This is going back right to the early days when they first came in.
Yeah.
And he bought an island in Fiji.
He bought an island?
Yes. Over in the 80s, he bought this island, went into bankruptcy, and he bought the island.
Wow.
And he set up a resort on the island. It had five or six beaches.
Yes.
And he built resorts on those beaches.
Yeah.
But private resort, like a large boray, very elegant boray with a chef and everything in it.
Oh, okay.
And he also catered to the wealthy and has had lots of movie stars and all those sort of people staying there, and he's done very well out of that.
Good target market.
Yes, another target market.
Yeah.
And that's what's very important, targeting your market.
100%. I was going to comment on that, you know, Bill, because to most people, I think, they think, oh, well, you know, that's an industry that I know nothing about. That's something I know nothing about. I'm not going to get involved. And you've been involved in so many different ones. But just from listening to you, like, I can tell you can apply that same business knowledge, you know, appealing to the target market with a unique spin with the marketing, whether it's in the toy store you're putting the hoops in them, or, you know, saying there's some topless gas pumpers at the petrol station, or the sports cars outside schools, you know. I think you would agree with me in saying it comes down to a lot about targeting the market rightly, getting them in.
Correct.
And then yes. making appeal to
yes,
them.
Definitely target your market.
Mm. Yep. So you think, have you ever found there's been any struggles being involved in so many different industries, or you think
yes,
it can be applied?
Always, there's always a struggle. Private business is always hard. It doesn't matter what people tell you. You know, people have ideas, but a lot of the problem with a lot of ideas are people think because they like it, everybody's going to like it. And unfortunately, that happens over and over. I'm dealing or helping a chap with a restaurant at the moment, and he thinks because he likes this Indian food that everybody is going to like the Indian food.
Mm.
But I've explained to him that his location for his restaurant is in the wrong place.
Yeah.
But he can't see that. And unfortunately, I can see what's going to happen within the next 6 months.
Mm. It's tricky. I think, you know, with emotions and passion and everything that comes involved with, especially businesses like restaurants, yeah. It can be easy to get blindsided, but it's important to definitely keep emotion out of it and, yeah, really focus on your target market. I mean, even I know that with my business, Willbot. At the start, I thought so many great AI automations. I was like, oh, people would love this because I was loving it. I was using it. But then when you take that into a real setting and you actually use it with real businesses and real clients like I did, I realized, oh, wait, no, they don't want this. They want this instead. And that's something I would have never thought of, you know, with the internal chatbots, for example, but it's something that they wanted. And since then, so many other businesses have been interested. So yeah, targeting your market
is the crucial
point.
Yes.
Well, you also mentioned about how, you know, you were in the bottom class in school and now everyone in that class is millionaires. I think you told me that one time.
Yeah, not all of them, but a lot of them.
A lot
are.
Of them. Wow.
Yes.
Well, it's still very interesting. I mean, especially showing that like, school's not for everyone. I definitely felt that way. And I think that's why I'm so glad programs like Open Ground exist. But we'll get onto that later in the podcast. I've allocated a spot for it. Don't worry. Thank you for sharing that, Bill. So the next thing I want to talk to you about, this is the AI Will Power Business podcast. So you've been around a long time, Bill. There's been so many technological advancements in the world, industry shakeups, and obviously in the present, that is AI, right? So firstly, what I want to ask you in your opinion is, throughout, you know, your experiences in businesses through the years with these industry changes and new technologies, you know, the internet, for example, what did you notice in the differences between businesses that embrace the new technology and businesses that were afraid of it and just said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to stick to what we know.
It actually depends on the business.
Okay.
Some businesses, the new technology is very, very good for.
Yeah.
And in fact, I would say 95% of businesses. There are some businesses where you just, it's not practical to use. But I do think, especially for marketing, for world recognition, getting your product out everywhere around the world, technology is an amazing thing. You know, when I grew up, television didn't come to New Zealand until I was about 9.
Wow.
So, and we had black and white television with the Kiwi on the screen for 2 hours and everybody sat around watching TV for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then it went off and it was only on 3 days a week.
3 days a week.
Two hours at a time when it first started, yes. And it's quite interesting when you look at the innovation that has happened since then.
Yeah.
You know, we had a party line phone. And then we eventually got our own phone number at home, which was a fixed line.
Yes.
And you didn't have other people using the same phone line, so it was quite a big novelty.
Wait, so sorry, because, you know, I was born in 2005. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of the listeners are also very young out there. Could you explain what is party line?
Okay, a party line, excuse me, yeah. A party line is where several people have the same phone number.
Okay.
And the operator used to wind a handle at the exchange and you had so many rings. And if you had two rings,
yeah,
that was your number. If the neighbor had three, if you heard it ring three times, you knew it was for the next door neighbor.
Oh, right.
So yours, and so then you answered it.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
You spoke, and then they could lift up the receiver and listen to your conversation as well if they wanted to. And most people didn't, but some did. And,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't the most secure way of having a discussion.
Imagine that. Imagine that now. Yeah. Every time you're on a phone call, you don't know if your neighbor's listening to it. Wow. That is crazy. So, yeah, I mean, so, wow, technology obviously has progressed so much. And it's such a rapid pace. This is what everyone's telling me, you know. Like I said, I was born in 2005. But
I laugh because my first mobile phone had a big heavy case and a battery that lasted about 2 hours and I had a stretchy cord and a handpiece off it.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
It was the sort of thing you sort of see on some of the early movies.
Yeah.
But quite funny to watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just amazing how technology has changed. And technology will continue to change.
Mm.
You know, we used to watch cartoons called the Jetsons and they'd have flying cars and things and we used to look at that and think, oh, how ridiculous is that? Nobody's ever going to have a flying car, but I wouldn't be surprised within the next 5 years if we don't have flying cars.
Wow, yeah.
So, you know, it's just amazing how the technology has improved things. Look at the internet around the world now.
Yeah.
You can get it anywhere. Doesn't matter where you are. There's coverage.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's these technologies that when they first come out, they seem so amazing. But now they're just part of everyday life, right?
Yes.
They're just things that you couldn't imagine a world without almost, right? Well, I couldn't.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that is why, like Tom and I were speaking about it last week, especially for the smaller businesses, it's really important to start looking at ways to implement AI and actually properly getting involved with it. Because if you don't, you know, you can get left behind by the other businesses that will.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I'm not going to ask you for your technical opinions on AI, don't worry. But, you know.
There won't be many.
But obviously, like, it's such an opportunistic time now to be leveraging that technology to really get a foot up. And, you know, like, I'm sure you would agree, it's like the internet, right? adapt it early and you can make big strides. So the next question I'm going to ask you is, in your opinion, if you can remember back to when there was stuff like, you know, businesses having their own phone numbers going off party lines, or, you know, websites starting to become a thing, what would you recommend to businesses that want to do it but, you know, they don't really know how? Do you think it's best to research themselves, outsource this work, allocate staff to do it? What do you think in your business opinion?
I definitely think outsourcing, because they're experts in those fields. But there again, you have to be very careful who you outsource to.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of technologies that keep changing. And if that company isn't up with the changes all the time, you can there be very easily caught with spending a lot of money on developing something that suddenly you can't add on to.
Absolutely.
So those are the big dangers around technology and platforms, things like that. I've learnt the hard way, and I think that I would always outsource, but I would also look for people that are in those fields or know a bit about that before I embarked on that project.
100%.
So do your own research, find out a lot of information around those sort of products,
yes,
and then look for the right people to do the job.
Very good. Yeah, I completely agree, Bill. I mean, I think if you compare someone who's doing this all day, every day, you know, it's their only thing, it's their main passion, of course they're going to be more knowledgeable than, you know, passing it off to a team member, for example, who's doing it part-time, isn't focused on it completely.
Exactly. Yep.
And you can end up getting stuck with these legacy systems, like you mentioned, you know.
Yep.
And that's something we've really considered at my business as well, is making sure that they're always going to be up to date, that it's planning for the future, that they're mobile, then, and that they're really an investment. So yeah, I completely agree.
it's a bit like items that are white labeled.
Yeah.
You can often get a white label product, or get a product that you can white label off the shelf,
yeah,
far cheaper than trying to develop it yourself. Oh,
100%.
And a lot of people think that they have to develop their own software. So many entrepreneurs start out, I'm going to build my own app, I'm going to build my own website, I'm going to build my own everything, and it ends up costing them five times as much, and it's nowhere near as effective as the off-the-shelf item.
100%. I completely agree. I mean, I see it too. You see businesses invest millions and millions of dollars into these softwares that basically already exist, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, why not just take what already exists, white label it, change it up a little bit,
yep,
but it's still going to cost you a fraction of the price.
Exactly.
So yeah, I completely agree. So thank you for that, Bill, giving your advice on AI. Outsourcing is the way to go. So hit us up if you want to implement some custom AI solutions. Okay. So now, Bill, what I really want to talk to you about, as we mentioned at the start, is Open Ground. So I know how hard you've worked to get Open Ground up and running, you've told me. And it's a fantastic program. Like I've told so many people, like it's what kept me at school. If Open Ground didn't exist, I would have dropped out just like you did and gone and pursued my business full time. You know, I was running my own business while I was at school, something completely different, but we ended up selling that and now we're doing the AI stuff. So I was ready to drop out, pursue my business full time, but I'm so glad I stayed. For the listeners, could you talk to me about Open Ground, what it is and why you wanted to start it?
Okay, well, for the last 25 years, I've been mentoring students and I used to do a lot with Young Enterprise. And toward the end, Young Enterprise is still very good,
yeah,
except I felt it was losing its way a bit. And so I decided that we needed to create something in the education system that was an alternative to university. A lot of students at school, when you leave school, don't know what they want to do. And I would say 90% don't know what they want to do. All right? If they want to be a doctor, university's great. If they want to be any sort of trade that requires discipline, like accountancy, legal.
The black and white stuff.
The black and white stuff.
Yeah.
I think university is a definite, you definitely need it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you need university for a lot of other things that people go to. You know, they do these way out, what I call wacky courses, that when you look at the end of the course, where are you going to be employed using that skill? And unfortunately, there's been more and more and more of that as universities expand. And I think we really need the education system to go back to basics. And so a lot of those people would go to university when they leave school because the system and parents are basically brainwashed to go to university. Everybody has to go to university. So the kids leave school, they go to university, pick some subjects, start going down it, and then probably, I don't know what percentage, but a large percentage drop out of university after the first year.
Yep.
And then they go pursue some sort of job or career or something, and they move around till they find what they want to do. So I decided, you know, my passion was always business, and I decided I wanted to develop this business school idea within high school because there are a lot of kids that were like me when I was there, not really academic but really focused on making a business and making money from day one.
Yeah.
With no student loan. In my day, we didn't have student loans. University was free.
Really?
So, yeah, so, but I still didn't go even when it was free.
They couldn't pay you to go.
No, definitely not pay me to go. So we went along and just started businesses. So Open Ground has come a long way in the last 3 years. It took me nearly 12 years to get it accepted. Luckily for me, David Ferguson, the headmaster at Westlake, backed me and he got it into the education system and got them to accept it and allow NCEA credits, which was fantastic for me.
Yes.
So that allowed us to develop the program with the help of other old boys.
Yep.
And we have a lot of mentors and we can see now how it's grown. In the last 3 years, in fact, this last year we had over 60 applicants from the school. At this point we can only take 35, but we're looking at ways to expand the program.
Yeah.
Because I can see next year there'll be 120 wanting to join it.
Mm.
It's really taken off. And there's some really interesting businesses coming out. When one of the main reasons some of the businesses that I mentored 15 years ago are now around the world.
Yeah.
And they've got head offices in UK. It's really interesting following these students that were
not
mentored and started their own businesses without this business school, started it, and some started through Young Enterprise.
Yeah.
And they've done really well.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic to see because New Zealand's made up of 90% or more than 90% of businesses in New Zealand have less than 10 staff.
Exactly, yeah.
So
it's an entrepreneurial
country.
It's an entrepreneurial country.
I completely agree.
You
know, our education system should be recognizing that, but it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Bill. I agree with absolutely everything you said, as I have for all of this podcast. I just want to give the listeners and the viewers a bit of context about what my experience was with Open Ground and how I went through it, just to sort of explain, you know, how this program is so unique. So basically, it's two periods out of the day out of six, which is completely spent on running your own business. So it's not in a normal classroom. It's in an office space. And you basically spend 20% of the day focusing on starting your own business and running your own business. Everyone at the start of the year gets paired up with a mentor. I was fortunate enough to get Bill. And then you keep meeting with that mentor throughout the year. And the mentors are real entrepreneurs, real business people, not teachers. Not that there's anything wrong with teachers. It's just, you know, these people have actually done it themselves, right? So you keep meeting with them, they support you, as well as the current program director, Ant, who's making sure everything gets going. You do a business plan at the start of the year. And then I think the plan is, you know, most of the businesses should be at market by the end of the year. I don't know if it's changed now, but when most I was there, yeah.
Well, 50% of them are at market.
Okay, so that's good, yeah. So, I started Willbot in Open Ground, and since then it's been so good meeting all the connections that I've got from the program. The opportunity to do Dragon's Den as well. There's a Dragon's Den setup where it's just like the show. You walk in, you do your pitch, and students have got the opportunity to meet some real investors and get funding. Like, it's honestly so amazing to think that this exists at school, because it's just something that I've really never seen been done before, and it was such an awesome thing to do. I'm so glad I did it.
Well, we'd like to roll the program out through all the high schools eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But we need the education system amended, and we need the education department or the ministers to accept the idea.
Yeah.
But we are doing it as a trial. It's actually kind of outside of the school.
Yeah.
It's been funded outside of the school. For that reason, so that we can modify it and amend it and grow it as the market grows.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things around the education system that I think, and I'll probably be shot down for, is the fact that I think students should be allowed to use devices in exams, such as Google, such as finding information, because actually in the real world, the education system should be educating people how to use things and find things. Because when you go out into the real world, that's what you do. You don't have to remember every single letter of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Admittedly, training your mind is an excellent tool, which is what they teach you, and I don't have anything against that. But when it comes to an exam, when somebody's extremely nervous sitting in an exam, why they can't use Google or to find information for answers, at the end of the day, you want the correct answer.
Exactly.
And if you're outside of school and you are doing something in a job, that's what you do. You look it up and you find it, and you need to know those skills. Mm. So I think those sort of skills should be taught as well.
Completely agree. I mean, you know, there's the famous saying, isn't it? I'm not sure exactly how it goes, but if I don't know the answer to your question, but I can get the answer to the question, does it really matter? You know? At the end of the day, like, that's how this world works. Anyone can go, you know, search up the answer to a question and get it instantly, as long as they're taught correctly how to research effectively, get the right sources, and make sure that they're getting the correct information. That would be infinitely more useful, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
than just how well you can memorize things.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Open Ground, the school system, it's obviously evolving, but it's something that really had a change. And it's been such a great program, like I've mentioned. So what I wanted to ask you was, we're 3 years into the program now. I did the second year. What do you think? How do you think the program has changed? How's it evolved? And what are the future plans?
Well, it's definitely evolved.
Yeah.
It's quite different to the first year. Mm-hmm. The second year changed. In the third year, it's definitely matured. It's like a business itself. So when you start a business, you pivot. You're constantly looking for new avenues, new ways to do things, better results. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly the same thing. And unfortunately, the education system is like what Tom spoke about last week,
mm-hmm.
was the fact that it's a big dinosaur and it's hard to move it. You can't change things easily.
Yes.
All right? So when a system is so big and so cumbersome, you need to find a way to modify that.
Mm-hmm.
And until they figure that out, it's going to be hard. And I think the idea of charter schools, adding more charter schools into the system, is a really good idea. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of people say, oh, we don't want charter schools, but I don't think they actually really understand the advantages of those charter schools. The government funds it, but they are also entrepreneurial, those schools.
Okay.
So I think there's a big advantage for students that go to those schools. So I, you know, I'll probably be shot down for this.
It's not live, don't worry.
But I really do think charter schools are the way to go.
Idea. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, Westlake as itself, like a lot of schools in New Zealand that have been around for a long time, have got some fantastic alumni, some people that have come out of these schools and really flourished. And, you know, I would really like to one day be a Open Ground alumni specifically and be able to, you know, give back, whether that's through mentorship or however it may be. But I'm working hard, Bill. I want to make the program proud. Don't worry.
Well, I think that's the idea, that yeah. these people, that students that go through Open Ground, will come back in 10 years
yeah.
and become the main alumni that actually help feed the Open Ground, whether it's financially or whether it's mentoring, whatever way they can. I think that's fantastic. And absolutely. That's the goal.
Yeah. And the, you know, the network and the connections, like I've met people who have done it the year before me and the year after me, and I'm sure I'm going to keep meeting new students that come through the program. And it's so interesting to, you know, just connect with them and share experiences, like talk business, what they're doing, how their business has evolved since the program. And I don't know, everything about it seems really positive. So it's going great. Yeah. I'm excited to see how it progresses. Okay, moving on. So now, Bill, the next thing I want to ask you is, you've obviously met so many young entrepreneurs, you've dealt with so many fresh startup businesses, so many industries. What is some advice, I'm going to ask you first, to someone who's out there and they're looking to start a business and they're trying to get started? What's one piece of advice you would give to them?
You have to be passionate about what you're doing.
Passionate.
If you are passionate about the product or service mm-hmm. that you want to deliver, you will succeed. But you have to be passionate. You have to be positive and not give up easily.
Okay.
Because I've seen businesses start that I have looked at and thought, there's no way in hell this person's going to make this work. I cannot see a way to make this work.
Yeah.
And they've turned it into a business.
Yeah.
And done reasonably well. And, you know, so you can't criticize anybody starting anything, really, mm-hmm. because you never know what's going to actually work.
Absolutely. Just like your old boss at the driving instructor's business,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You're never
exactly.
going to do it. You're never going to do it. And look what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So you've just got to think outside the box, mm-hmm. look at your target market, and make sure there is definitely a target market before you even embark on it, all right? Because so many people fall over by believing their own thoughts, all right? Mm-hmm. They don't research. They think because they love it, everybody's going to love it. And that isn't the case always, all right? It's not hard to test your market. Mm-hmm. You've just got to think outside the box of ways to test the market. And away you go.
There you go. Aspiring entrepreneurs out there, you've heard it here first. Target market, do your right market research, and also don't be passionate, be the right person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, when I've invested in businesses, I usually invest in the people, not the business.
Really?
In most cases, the business is always part of it, obviously, mm-hmm. but it's actually the people you invest in.
Very true.
So if the person's the right person to run the business, the business will thrive.
Absolutely.
If you put the wrong person in to run a business, it will sink. So, and you see it a lot in public companies and private companies when they grow, mm-hmm. and they bring in the wrong staff members, or they bring in the wrong people in the management positions.
Mm-hmm.
And too many businesses, as they grow, they get hierarchical. And you have to have a certain amount of hierarchical in a business, but you should never forget where you came from and always go back and talk to the staff at the front line. Because if you don't talk to the people at the front line, you don't understand really what's happening as the business is evolving.
Yeah.
So you must always remember to go back to the front line.
Wow. Very good. Yeah. This is very, very insightful advice. And yeah, it's very interesting to hear. Yeah, it's the people. And, you know, I'm going to take this back to Open Ground again. I mean, I'm such a big fan of it. I'm going to take this back to Open Ground. What I've noticed through that program as well is so many people in that program have started one business. Maybe it didn't work out, or maybe it wasn't quite right. And then they've pivoted that or started something new, which is so much more valuable now, right? Just because they're that type of person and now they've got a little bit of experience under their belt and they're ready to keep progressing.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you see that quite often. And not everybody that's in the program is cut out to run a business.
Of course.
What's actually happened in there where they've not really made it work, but their skills are valuable to somebody else, they've joined forces. And they've formed a business where they've recognized their skill sets and they've all become business partners in that.
Yes.
And, you know, when a business starts, it's all friendly and lovely, mm-hmm. all right? Everybody's happy. That's the time to set up your structure
yep.
and all your agreements, yep. all right? You must have a shareholders agreement
mm-hmm.
and you must set up all of that paperwork. You need to do it, because if you don't
yeah.
and it turns to custard, there's no way out
mm-hmm.
other than through court or arguments or fights. And nobody wins that way except the lawyers.
Very true. Only the lawyers win in legal battles. Absolutely.
Right.
Charging their absurd hourly rates or whatever
exactly.
it is.
Exactly.
But everyone's got to eat. Anyway, that's very interesting to hear. The next thing I want to ask you, Bill, is obviously right now economically, times are not the easiest they've ever been. Specifically to small businesses, businesses that are in the startup phase, what's some advice you would give to them who are getting through this and trying to navigate the tough times that we're sort of seeing at the moment?
Well, you have to remain lean and mean.
Mm-hmm.
You have to focus
yeah.
more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some do give up because banks are fair weather friends.
Mm.
All right. They love you when the sun's shining and they take the umbrella away when it rains. All right. So remember, I don't have anything against banks, but
yeah.
that's how they think. All right. Because they are also a structured industry.
Mm.
And they have to tick boxes and everything must fit correctly.
Yes.
So the market, while things can be going along fine and your LVR ratios are perfect,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a crash like there is at the moment or a recession, your property values or whatever you're using as security reduces,
mm.
but the loan stays the same.
Yeah.
Right? But the ratio has shrunk.
Yes.
So you've got more exposure to the bank than you had before.
I see.
So the banks will then look to tighten up or put you on penalty interest, which actually only causes more problems.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, banks, if you're open with people and with banks, they will talk to you. And they will be reasonable with you. But if you hide from them, they will come down with a hammer.
Mm.
And most people hide from them because they're scared what's going to happen. If I tell the bank this, they might do this or they might do that. But in most cases, if you're open and honest with them and straight up with them, they will work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like anybody in any team. They will all work with you if you are open and honest with them and clear
yeah.
in your direction and why you want to do something,
mm-hmm.
they will work with you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that can be applied to anything
exactly.
in life, right?
Any part of the business.
Yes.
Yep.
Open, clear, and be assertive as
yep.
well.
Be very firm important. In your thoughts, but also be open-minded.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people can come up with an idea and some people might rubbish it and you might rubbish it, but then you'll think about it and then you'll think, I could apply that somewhere else mm-hmm. in another part of the business. Not there, but yeah. that was actually a really good idea. So never put people down that come up with ideas, even if it seems a bit crazy.
Yeah.
Never rubbish them for it, because one day you could use that.
No one ever learned anything from talking, right? You got to listen. You don't have to take
right.
every piece of advice on,
no.
but you have to listen, understand, and not be close-minded.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, something else I remember you said to me a few weeks ago now, because I think I was asking you something similar to do with, you know, these economic times, was if you can make money in a down market, you can absolutely make money in an up market.
Absolutely.
And it'll bounce back, right?
Yep, it'll bounce back. I've seen this a few times before.
Yeah.
I went through the 80s, the 90s.
Yeah.
Crash, you know, when things were good and then bad
right.
and then good and bad. And now we're coming into this. And honestly, I look at this, the world market has been quite bad this time.
Mm.
And, of course, we've also got the threat of uncertainty around the world, around wars, things like that. I mean, that hasn't happened in my lifetime until now.
Mm.
I mean, we've always had small wars. We had like the Americans in Vietnam. We had other smaller wars around. The Middle East has always been unsettled.
Yeah.
But we've never seen what we're seeing today, which is quite sad in a way.
Yeah.
Because people need to learn tolerance. And if they don't learn tolerance, you'll end up with mayhem.
Yes. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, something out of my control. So I try
I
to
know.
Focus
it's
on my business.
It's out of mine as well.
Okay. Time's coming to an end, so yeah. I'll start to wrap this up. Bill, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your incredible journey, insights, and expertise. It's been truly inspiring to hear about some of your experience and hear some great advice that I know I'm going to be applying to myself, and everyone listening at home should definitely be doing the same. Before we wrap up, is there anything that you would like to promote on here at all? No pressure. You don't have to.
Anything I'd like to promote? Well, I'd like to promote Will Bob.
Oh, look at that. How good.
I think Will does a great job.
Okay.
He's doing a very good job. And I think he's grown a lot since Open Ground started. And what I've noticed the changes
yes.
in him, in yourself,
yes,
since then has been amazing. So it's nice to see.
Oh, thanks, Bill. I wasn't expecting a testimonial, but I greatly appreciate that.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, I've obviously been very grateful for all the advice that I've gotten from you, Tom, everyone that you've introduced me to. It's been great, and I'm excited to progress.
Yep.
So thanks so much, Bill. For our listeners, I hope you found today's episode as enlightening as I did. If you're interested in how AI can revolutionize your business, go to willbot.ai, book a chat with me, and we can discuss further. Stay tuned for next week's episode. We've got another great guest planned. If you'd like to watch last week's episode with Tom, who's Bill's business partner, and also another one of my mentors, you can do that. Thanks for listening. See you next time on AI Will Power Business. Thanks,
Will.